Hi guys, it's Steven. If you happen to live in the Philadelphia area, or you love us enough that you'd travel from anywhere, Waiting for Babies is doing a live interview event and launch party at WeWork in Northern Liberties on Wednesday, August 9th. I have some very special guests I'll be interviewing, and there will be drinks and people I've worked with throughout the years, and I promise it'll be a fun time. Tickets are available on the site at waitingforbabies.com. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled programming. I love the buzz in the beginning. Hi, I'm Steven Mavros, and this is Waiting for Babies. On our last interlude, we discussed recurrent pregnancy loss, what that means, and what some of the paths forward are when sometimes getting pregnant isn't the hard part, but going from a positive test to holding an actual child in your arms is. Our story today comes from Jennifer and Jeffrey Spentine, who started down their path to conception exactly the way they hoped for after they got married and decided to give the whole baby-making thing a try. Oh, and before we jump in, just a quick note about the audio here. I often do these interviews at people's homes, and remember, this is a podcast about fertility, so if a child is in the story at some point, you're bound to hear lots of funny background noises from toys, cartoons, or other things that entertain those children. It's just one of the hazards of the trade. Okay, back to Jen and Jeff, first trying to have a baby right after they got married.
Hey, let's see if it works kind of situation. And it worked the first time. And we were both freaking out because we didn't have a house yet, living in a small condo, and then you're pregnant, just got married 5 minutes ago. So
initially, everything looked good. But at 11 weeks, when she had her first appointment with an OB, they found the fetus had stopped growing way back at the six-week mark, and quickly after she had a miscarriage.
Doctor said, 1 in 4 women have them. Chalk it up to that. And we kind of just were like, whoa. I didn't want to talk about it then. And I think a lot of women going through this feel embarrassed, shame, it's your fault. Even though it's nothing we did, I feel like most women, that's how they feel.
Had you gotten pregnant prior to when you were trying?
No. Nope. Literally
was the first try.
Unfortunately, that didn't work out because I was like, this is great. This is great. What are people talking about? Well, little did I know.
Everyone handles a miscarriage differently. And Jen took perhaps longer than a lot of others I've talked to before trying again.
Probably about a year until we started trying again.
When Jen says it took a year to recover before trying again, she even meant going back on birth control because she wasn't ready to deal with the possibility of a miscarriage happening again for the whole year. Now, during her time off, she tried to think of all the things that had happened to her in her life that might have an effect on her fertility, and one of them was Graves' disease.
So I was always worried maybe that would affect me trying to have kids one day. But again, doctors, my whole life, no, you'll be fine. And then when I got the radioactive iodine, I don't know if you know the process. It's crazy. You're in the hospital in the nuclear department, and like an astronaut comes in. Full suit with a can.
No way.
Opens it, smoke comes out. Tongs.
What?
And says, swallow this. And it was so quick how everything went crazy with my thyroid. I'm 22.
Oh my God.
I am taking this pill
from an astronaut.
Right. And then after, their guidance was wash the shower out. When you're done, flush the toilet twice. You cannot be around pregnant women. You can't be around children.
Did they tell you not to touch people?
Just don't go near pregnant women. But I'm like, if I don't know? Am I glowing? Is there like a purple halo?
It's a bad episode.
Worked out.
It is,
yeah.
Right.
What if I'm near like a black light?
If untreated, there is some evidence that Graves' disease can affect fertility rates. But Jen had it under control, so that didn't appear to be the problem. So, ready to get back at it after a year, she comes off of birth control and relatively quickly finds herself pregnant again. This time, at her 11-week initial ultrasound, things look good and on track. Right around this time, it's typical for an OB to do a preliminary screening for genetic disorders. The screening often gives you the odds of the likelihood of a genetic abnormality to occur. When the results came back, the risks were a little higher than usual.
And then I had my first ultrasound at 11 weeks, where they do the first trimester screening. They measure the neck, they do the blood work. Everything looked good there. And then they call 2 days later and say, your risk is 1 in 8. So scheduled a CVS like the following week. And
what was that like?
It was shocking.
So describe a CVS to
CVS. As
if people don't even know what that is.
That is where they go into the lining of the placenta and they take out cells, send them for testing. It is like a OB appointment, like a PAP. Maybe 10 seconds longer. That was it. Doctor was amazing. Like he's one of those people I won't forget. He was amazing because I was like trembling, so scared. And then a week later, it was confirmed. So then we made the decision to do what we needed to do. It was best for us. And people may judge. I would never judge. But I don't regret. We don't ever regret that for us. Just because it was best for us.
So if you didn't catch her meaning, the test came back positive for a genetic abnormality. And after meeting with a genetic counselor, they decided to terminate the pregnancy. They were told ahead of time that even if they were able to carry to term, given there was only a 50-50 chance of having a successful birth, the baby would either have significant developmental disorders and/or chronic health issues. So they decided to end it. Needless to say, this was not an easy decision for them to make. Given they'd already suffered a miscarriage that rocked them to their core, knowing they had to choose to end a pregnancy was awful, but it's one they realized they don't regret. The procedure and its effects, though, were a bit surreal.
But you come home and you're like, it's over. It's over. Like, I can't believe, I was pregnant yesterday. I was throwing up yesterday. And now you're like, my milk came in. That was horrible. Because at that point, I was 15 and a half weeks. So even though your milk wouldn't come in, your body thinks you had a baby. So it's like, now I'm home. My boobs are like bowling balls. And I want to just crawl in a hole. I was Googling like everything. Cabbage that worked. Cold cabbage leaves. So I was just like walking around.
Like in your bra? Like where did
in my bra, yep. And then I have, you know.
Do you know this is a thing?
On top of it, like.
Does everyone have a job?
Like, I have a job. I'm working. And I'm like, I'm going to be out for a week. Thank God. Boss was supportive. You know, that was great. But absolutely carry with me every day, even now. Every day.
So after a really hard decision and sharing it with some friends, Jeff was starting to think that two problematic pregnancies wasn't just bad luck.
You know, the challenges of trying to have a child, right? You know, you're going to have miscarriages and they can happen. So the first time it really, to me, you know, I would look at it as, okay, well, we'll try again and we'll get through it. You know, it's funny when you go, not funny, but ironic when you go through these things and, you know, you talk to other friends and they mentioned to you that, oh, yeah, we had that problem. I mean, I never brought it up to you before, right. But then it comes out. You know, once you express to them something that you've had to go through, then they bring it up to you. Like, oh, yeah, we had one, we had two. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that, you know. Yeah. So you're like, it would have been nice for you to share that. But I understand it all. Everyone handles matters privately and differently. You know, I'm a little different in terms of how I manage those things are more expressive. But yeah, so then you find out, oh, okay, well, you went through it before. So then it makes you even feel more confident that, well, then, you know, we will get to where we want to go in terms of having a baby. So, you know, I guess after that point, you know, I figured, okay, well, when it's time again, well, we should be okay. So then when things kind of didn't turn around, then you start to get, you know, more concerned, more worried about this isn't the path that others have, you know, gone down. You know, they've been able to resolve, they've been able to get through it, you know, this something different is going on here. And that's when I started, you know, to get a little worried and concerned. And I was like, hey, this is something different, you know.
Jen too was getting an inclination that something wasn't right, and had an inkling as to what might be going wrong.
I found this group on Yahoo where it was like about balanced translocations. And I was like, these stories sound like mine, but I said to myself, I guarantee you it's me. I'm going to have the genetic issue. And then sure enough, I was like, let's go get tested. Went to the lab, got it done, came back that I had the balanced translocation.
Okay, unless you're a geneticist, we're going to need to take a quick pause here and go over what she's referring to, and I intensely apologize for bringing Biology 101 back to your lives, but here goes. So inside the nucleus of human cells, we have our base genetic material, and it's comprised of 46 chromosomes, or 23 pairs. In people with balanced translocation, they're born where two of the chromosomes have broken off and swapped places. So they have a full set of 46, and are usually healthy. It's just that two parts are in the wrong place. So when those cells divide in half and join with another set from the partner for reproduction, remembering the man provides 23 and the woman provides 23, those translocated chromosomes can come together and divide improperly. How this manifests is that sometimes things combine and divide well and a healthy pregnancy is possible, and sometimes they don't, and this can lead to miscarriage or birth defects. Getting pregnant naturally, as Jen and Jeff were, every time was basically a coin toss as to whether their chromosomes would line up well or would go astray. Though this was daunting a thought, to Jen there was a silver lining in that they had something that many people struggling with fertility don't always get, a reason. One of the hard parts, though, was that it wasn't an easy one to discuss, as it went over people's heads, so it was a little bit isolating.
I wouldn't know what it meant either if someone brought it to me. If my friend came and said, oh, I have a balanced translocation, I'd be like, what? What is that? Oh, chromosome? I'm trying to explain to family. Nope. Friends? Nope. No. They're like, what? What do you mean? Chromosomes are stuck together? And, well, how does that affect you having a baby? And I don't get it. So at one point I was just like, I'm closing this chapter and just saying I carry something genetic. So once I said that, everyone's like, oh yeah. Is it like hemophilia? I'm like,
because all they really want to know is, can you get pregnant or not? Or
like, that's it.
Right? It's like,
right,
yeah,
right, right.
Know where else
right.
to go.
The,
yeah.
Again, you can't blame no, people right. for not jumping into a book and being like, right. let's read about Jen's issue. Right. I want to learn more. People are like, okay. So that was two.
How? So you took like a year off after
yes.
the first miscarriage.
Right.
Did knowing that something was like wrong per se, did that change that equation the next time around? Or did you still feel like you needed a lot of time to recover?
Not as long, because I felt armed with info and prepared. And if you get pregnant again, this is what we'll do differently. Mm-hmm. We will get early ultrasounds. We will schedule a CVS at 11 weeks right out of the gate.
So you guys got pregnant so fast each
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Were you, like, in between, like, even two and three at that point, was, like, had sex changed? Like,
yes.
Was it
yeah.
remotely fun anymore?
Not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're worried. You're worried. You're just like, what if I get pregnant? Oh, my God. Let's try not to get pregnant. So you live in that zone until 6 months go by, and we're like, okay, let's relax a little bit. Okay, so we go to try again. We're armed with information. We know what to expect. I find out the day after an Eagles game that I was pregnant.
Quickly again, like first or second
time? First time.
So you guys know you can do one thing really well.
Is get pregnant. Which is a curse and a blessing. You know, if I was healthy, we would probably have four kids by now. Which, I'd probably be dead. early ultrasound, 8 weeks, heartbeat, good. That's one check. CVS scheduled, 10 weeks will do it. Scheduled that. Go to that appointment, no heartbeat. This one knocked us on our ass the worst. I don't know what it was about that appointment, but
did you guys go together?
We were together. I was nervous to get the CVS. even though I had had it before. And I was in the waiting room and I said to Jeff, these people are saints that work in these high-risk places for having to give bad news.
No one takes bad news well.
He's going through it now. And I said, I can't imagine having to deliver bad news. Like, and then 20 minutes later, here we are. We're those people. I call my mom immediately because she's waiting by the phone. And I was just like, no. And I hung up. And that was it. Like, and I could just hear her scream. Like, he lost it, which no one ever wants to see their husband or spouse, partner, whatever, cry, especially a man. When his mom called, he lost it on the phone. And I was like, we can't keep doing this. Like, this is it. This is it. We're done. I was like, it might just be us. It could just be us. And that's fine. We got married because we loved each other and we didn't get married to have kids solely.
So after three intensely difficult miscarriages, Jen and Jeff were given an option they hadn't thought of before, IVF. Now remember our talk about the genetics of her balanced translocation. With Jen's issue, every time she got pregnant was a roll of the dice. There was a chance the embryo formed would be genetically good, and there was a chance that it wasn't. Now, so far, she'd had some pretty bad dice rolls. Now, here's where IVF comes in. So if you combine IVF with PGS, or pre-implantation genetic screening, you can actually weed out the embryos that have the abnormal genetic material and only use the ones that don't. Now, in theory, if that leads to a pregnancy, essentially the problem is solved, and the risk of miscarriage should decrease substantially. Jen and Jeff had different reactions to this possibility, but one thing they were both taken aback by was the cost. IVF was already an expensive endeavor, with testing, procedures, medications, costing anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000. PGS, the genetic testing, can add more thousands of dollars to that cost. In the beginning, if the cost could be sorted, Jen was pretty sure she was on board, but Jeff was a little hesitant.
It just wasn't a part of, like, my beliefs. My life plan, you know, kind of what I thought would be right. We talked about it, you know, at first because we didn't know what was going on. And we said, you know what, we'll be happy. There's plenty of couples we know. Well, not plenty, but there's a couple, you know, we'll be happy. But I knew she was saying it, but she wasn't meaning it. You know, when somebody says something they didn't mean. And so I had to come around. And I wanted a family more than anybody else too. It wasn't that I didn't want one. Right. It's just that, you know, I always thought, hey, you know, Mother Nature has a plan for things, you know, in the natural world. But then again, you know, I started thinking, look, I'm in the medical community. I sell science to help people get better. And so maybe, you know, in this case, it does make sense. And so I just probably had to do a lot of like deep thinking on my own. And despite, you know, what, you know, I believe Mother Nature had planned for people and individuals, you know. People and individuals don't plan on getting cancer either, and we overcome that. So, you know, I kind of had to look at things through two lenses instead of my own lens, and I started thinking about things that way. And so this is just another way that, you know, modern science and people have created to enable those that can't do can. So that's the way I looked at it. So it just took time, you know.
How did you convince him that moving forward was a good idea?
Maybe when our insurance covered it. When it went from 30,000 to like 1,000.
Wow. And it was really 30. That was what they were quoting.
Probably
you.
With the PGD. Yeah. And the meds, which was the hardest part of it all. Was the insurance. It wasn't the needles. It wasn't getting to the appointments. It was dealing with insurance because I got rejected twice. So I typed this like 5-page. It was like Jerry Maguire, right? Let it all out there. Literally, someone called me like that day at like 5 o'clock. They're like, we're so sorry. It took you got rejected. If this is going through, your meds are going through. Case closed. And I was like, oh my God. Shocked. I was crying. She felt so bad. She was like, you don't need any of this. This, you have a condition. It's all good. I was, they got the facts. They're like, what did you do? They were like, no one gets rejected twice and then gets approved. I was like, this is my middle name. I do not give up, right? And I will be annoying as shit. I would have drove to Aetna's CEO's house and been like, Clark Griswold. Really.
So with the insurance sorted, they moved ahead. Let me just do a quick IVF refresher. So basically, women normally produce one follicle or egg every month. But with IVF, women are given injectable hormones that cause their ovaries to produce as many eggs as they can get going at one time, with the goal of retrieving all the mature eggs. This was new territory for Jen, as getting pregnant had never been an issue before, so she never needed this type of stimulation.
And this is the first time you've ever been on hormones, because up until this point, pregnancy wasn't a problem.
First time. And I will say, it wasn't that bad. I think I had one meltdown, which I think is pretty good. Like, I was like, take the drugs, get them out. I'm done. Call the doctor. I am done. Laying on the floor.
What tipped it?
I don't even know. It could have been a fly in the house. I have no idea. Like, it definitely wasn't huge. It was just, I had had enough.
What did he do?
He's very calm, cool, collective. Like, I envy that. I envy that. Because I am like, I could fly off. And then... But
he also didn't have hormones and needles going in him every other day.
Right. And, you know, getting D&Es and, like, that stuff doesn't leave you ever. It gets buried in the back, but it's always there. So I'm still recovering from that. And now it's, you know, shots.
And that's the song that I'm going to play during if this is a podcast.
Right. Please do. That was awesome. Please do.
Fade in, fade out.
Yeah. I can't wait.
We took a break for a dance party. Yeah. Right. And then we came back.
Why are you guys missing for 4 minutes? And now you're drunk.
And we're back. Yeah, now you're drunk.
What was it like doing that first shot when you had to do one?
Scary. It was. And I think it didn't go great. There was blood.
Can we get a second opinion on that one?
She remembers. But it was, yeah, there was blood. And that was, a lot of it, some of it was, you know, we probably didn't ice long enough, so the tissue was warmer than it needed to be, so there was more blood there to come out, so that was probably part, and it was all learning, you know, we had to figure out how to get through it.
But it was,
and that was the funny thing about, you know, this whole process was, you know, we learned what we needed to do and got expert at it. And, you know, it wasn't like we ever got scared off by something. It was like, okay, this is what we got to do next time. And it was like, all right, ice it longer, then do this. And then, you know, we got better and better at it, you know, so.
It's really amazing what you can not only get used to, but then actually come to make normal and as a challenge you can even improve at. Now, next up in the IVF process was the egg retrieval, which is done at the clinic under a form of anesthesia called conscious sedation, a fancy term for a type of mild anesthesia where, as the term says, you're both conscious, but sedated enough you don't remember what happened. The grogginess between that sedation and waking up often leads to funny moments at the fertility clinic.
So walk through retrieval for us for you.
Retrieval is, we go in, we both go in, he has to do a sample, which is stressful because your wife's being put to sleep in 5 minutes and they're like, oh, go in a room, you know? So I wake up from sedation and all I could say was, did you go? And he was like, would you shut up? I was struck. And then I asked how many eggs. And my husband's like, we're good, Jen. And I'm so sad because it was not... If I was in my right mind, I would have never screamed it in front of other people. There was, like, nurses laughing. I'm sure I'm not the first, right?
So you're sitting in the waiting room. You're freaked out because you have to go do this.
Yeah.
And how was he attentive to you? And then just like got up and walked in and did his
thing? He's just like, it's all good. It's all good. And I'm just like, what is that world that you live in? It's like Willy Wonka. Like, what world is that? But that's great. That's why we work out, because he is like that and I'm the crazy person.
Now, as I've said before, fertility treatments are so women-focused that logistically, and this isn't to take away from their clear emotional role, but for the purpose of IVF, the man's job is a tad easier, as all they need is some sperm, which are a lot easier to collect than eggs are.
I know for a guy, it's a very, like, that day when you go in for the big, like, retrieval,
mm-hmm.
your job's totally different than what she's about to have to go through.
Yeah.
Was it, were you nervous about that before?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you, like, prep in some way or think about how to calm down or, like, how to...
Yeah, I try to just focus everything on, we're doing this for her. You know, yeah, I mean, I try to just not really, I guess, like, really think too much about it. Like, okay, we got a job to do tomorrow. We got to go in and, you know, Jen's job's a lot harder than my job, so don't mess this up. But I did not think about it, like, don't mess this up. Like, just, you know, just go in and just, you know... But yeah, no, it's actually, you know, quite nerve wracking because everyone's preparing, right? The surgeons are preparing, the Jen's preparing to go through. So, I mean, everyone's job is a lot more difficult in a way, you know, I mean, than what I have to do. And so, yeah, you don't want to be the cog in the wheel that messes everything up. So,
the first few days after retrieval can be particularly difficult for people going through it, as there are constant updates on the status of the embryos. When Jen's eggs were retrieved, they were taken into the embryology lab for fertilization. Now, depending on what was determined beforehand, the eggs are fertilized by putting them together with the sperm sample that was given, or more commonly now, the embryologist will go through the sample, find the best-looking sperm they can, and inject it directly into the egg to fertilize it. This is referred to as ICSI, or intracytoplasmic sperm injection. Once the eggs are fertilized and become embryos, they start to divide and grow. Even under the best circumstances, in healthy women who do well with stimulation, not all eggs retrieved are mature, not all eggs fertilize normally, and not all embryos grow properly. So as IVF patients are getting daily updates from the embryologist, the number of viable embryos can dwindle quickly. And Jen's circumstance was even more precarious than most, as she needed to still genetically test the embryos, so probably the number she would have left once that was done would be less still.
Okay, they retrieve 11 eggs, like 8 are mature, so that was bad news because you lose 3, and then they call you every day with an update up until they're fertilized. 6 fertilized out of the 11, and then 4... were sent for PGD.
Now, Jen is saying PGD, but she actually had PGS. PGD is just a different, sometimes more complicated genetic test for finding different mutations, so it's easily confused. So how do they do PGS? Back when Jen was doing this a few years ago, the embryologist would let the embryos divide for about 3 days, going from a single cell to about 8 cells. To do the PGS, they need to remove one of those cells and send it off to a lab for testing. The thought of this is still amazing to me, that we had the technology to take these microscopic cells, be able to pluck just one of them off without destroying the whole thing. So they sent that one cell off for testing, and the embryos are now at 7 cells instead of 8. They go back into the incubator to hopefully keep growing and dividing. 2 days later, which is when the test results are due back, they can put aside the abnormal embryos and choose a good one to put back into Jennifer. We refer to this as embryo transfer. So 5 days after retrieval, Jen and Jeff are headed back to the clinic for the transfer and anxiously waiting to know if any of the embryos have made it through the gauntlet that is genetic testing, and they get a call from the embryologist.
We just got them back from the lab. We lost 2 more, and of the 2, but they're saying no signal. And I was like a turn signal? What's happening? So I said, what's no signal? She's just like, they're alive and well. But there's no signal. She's like, I have no idea. So she said, we can toss them and start over, put them in anyway without knowing
the health. Are you in the office at this point, or are you in the
car? No, I'm in a parking lot at the mall crying. I'm fed up. You know, that's when I was like, I've had enough. or re-biopsy, freeze them, wait like 5 days for the results. Well, I'm not going to throw them out because that's like what I do with my trash. I'm not going to put them in to end up in a termination situation again when I just went through IVF for a purpose to find out, to find a healthy baby. So I said, let's re-biopsy them. They were doing it for free. There was no cost. That was a Sunday. Friday, they call and say, one is normal, one is not. I'm like, oh my God. You're like Rocky at that point. You're not out of the woods because they don't even, this thing is in a, that's, freezing an embryo to me is the most amazing how they can do that and thaw it and it's still thriving.
So now when you're in that, when you're in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And
then we go home.
You're like, was that a hard decision?
Yeah.
To make?
When she gave us our options, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, made the decision on the phone. Like, she's telling me and I'm telling him. And he's like, I don't know. What do you? And I'm like, oh. I was not putting them in without knowing. I mean, to me, that's just like setting yourself up for failure again. Then we hung up the phone and I was like, huh. So we were just going to go to our transfer. And then I have to call. Your guys are on the way. I'm like,
because you were doing acupuncture as
right,
well.
Right. Before and after. And it was just, yeah, your mind is spinning.
I've been in the same position from the other end many times. Remember, I'm an acupuncturist and I specialize in doing acupuncture right before the embryo transfer. Too many times I've woken up super early, just like my patients, am an hour into fighting Philly traffic to get to where the clinic labs are, all to get a frantic and sometimes sob-filled call from a patient telling me the transfer is not happening either because the embryos didn't make it or the genetic results weren't good. It's just devastating for them. Thankfully, in this case, the results were just inconclusive, and they were successfully able to biopsy the embryos again, freeze them without losing any, and the second test was actually conclusive. Now, just to give you a sense of timing, Jen and Jeff couldn't just put the embryo back in right away when they got the test results. There's a very specific timing to this. When you're transferring embryos back in, the body, and in particular the uterus, have to essentially be in the same stage as the age of the embryo. So in this case, the embryo was now frozen at 5 days old. So Jen had to come off her meds, get her period, get put back on medications, which in this case meant mostly estrogen for a few weeks, followed by progesterone, just to mimic the state the body would normally be in for a 5-day embryo to be developing and ready to implant into the wall of the uterus. That whole process, from that day in the parking lot, took around 5 weeks. So finally, the actual transfer day arrives, and they have one good embryo, one shot. So they go in for their transfer, and it thankfully goes smooth and easy.
Had the transfer. Amazing to see, because they show it on the TV. And it just goes, and you see like a little spark flash on the screen, and he's like, that's it. And you're like, so I'm not moving. But they explained it, which I will never forget, because a lot of women, they're like, did you lay there for 20 minutes? What should I do? Like, should I not? She said, it's like a grain of rice inside of peanut butter. She's like, is that rice going to move? I'm like, no. So I thought, one of those weird things you remember. But I, of course, come home. I don't get out of bed for 2 days. I'm not sneezing.
Because they told you to, or
nope,
this is just
nope,
you?
Nope, just me. I'm eating the pineapple core. There's supposedly, you know, enzymes in pineapple core that's supposed to make your environment sticky. I'm like, we're eating it. We're eating it. We're eating the spinach. Socks on. Socks on your feet.
Is this from, like, where is this from?
Dr. Google, always. Okay. Yeah, Dr. Google.
First off, as far as I know, none of those things she just said have been proven to help with embryo transfer success rates. But to be fair, I don't think anyone's actually studied most of them, so it's possible, but I'll be a little skeptical until proven otherwise. I can't even tell you the number of things on the internet that purportedly help with transfer day. It's like an anthropological study into superstition. From pineapple core to multiple days of strict horizontal bed rest to McDonald's french fries. Now, because I know how my patients are, anyone going through IVF right now is both laughing in agreement about the superstition thing and at the same time Google searching McDonald's French fries and IVF, because if somewhere on the internet there was some teeny research study that showed it worked, they're going to do it. It's just how it is. So now Jeff and Jen settle into that dreaded period we refer to as the two-week wait. With IVF, it's more like a 9-day wait, but it's still a time when you have no way to figure out if everything you just did and put your heart into worked, or you are back to square one and have to start all over. Needless to say, they were anxious.
It's exactly that. It's just anxiety and waiting. I mean, your just mind races in 100 different directions all the time. You know, there's not really anything else you can do because you don't know. And it's as much as you don't want it to dominate your thoughts every day, all day long, you can't help it, right? I mean, it's something, you know, you've been working so hard to get there and you put so much effort into everything. And so, yeah, it's just tough. I mean, there's really no other way to get around it. You know, you say, oh, I'm going to focus on work, and, you know, and you are, you have to, you have a daily job to do. But when you're at night, when you're home, you know, and you're not at the job, or before you go to bed, you know, or when you wake up, it's sort of just, you know, and all this is just, I want an answer. You know, at that point in time, we did everything we possibly could, right? And we're continuing to do so. So if it's going to work out, it's going to work out. And if it's not, let me try again. This is kind of how I'm wired. So, you know, wipe myself. I mean, I probably still fell asleep at the time. I normally probably made her mad, which I know it did.
Like,
I probably still
make it.
Because, like, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, working. Because I tell you what, the confidence I had in their practice made me probably feel that way too. I mean, they were just so amazing and professional and good at what they did. And I think I looked at it as, okay, if this doesn't work, and boy, that will stink because we've come this far. They got us this far. Who says they can't get us this far again? You know, and I'm just like one of those, that's just kind of how I think, you know, hey, try once, try again, you know? And it was like, again, a credit to them, you know? And then a credit to Jen because she did so well through the whole thing. I know it would be tough for her to have to go through it again, but it was at the same time like, all right, well, we've come this far and our heads are still attached. We're still together and yeah, still happy. So if we had to go through this again, I know we can get here. So it's probably what I was thinking. Yeah.
Now, as you've already figured out from the noises and sometimes screams in the background, Jen and Jeff's IVF worked, and that single genetically good embryo made it all the way this time. But I want you to keep some perspective, because they didn't know that at the time. Remember, up until this point, they'd already had 3 miscarriages. So in Jen's mind, nothing was assured.
Did it feel different to be pregnant that time? Like, was that fear and that anxiety
fear was there.
As strong?
Fear was there. Anxiety was there. I was so sick, but I was so sick with the other 3, too. So with the PGD or PGS, it's not 100%. And the lab still says you should get a CVS. I didn't get it, but I had said if anything weird came up at your first trimester screening, if anything weird came up, I would obviously get it. But I was sick. I was sick. I was throwing up all day. And then one day it stopped. The sun is out again. And then I was like, wait a minute. What if something's wrong? I miss throwing up now. I want to throw up again. So it's all that. I'm calling my OB. Can I come in for a Doppler? Please. She's like, all right, come in. I'll do you at lunch. Like, mm-hmm. I had high-risk nurse. I mean, these people treated me like I was gold. Even at the high-risk doctor. They were like, we've heard your story. He's like, you're Jennifer? Oh my God. I have heard your story. I was reading your chart. He's like, this baby is a miracle. I'm going to tell my students about this. And I was just like, this is great. This is great. You're like a star. He was fine. Everything was fine. And my pregnancy was perfect. I had no issues.
Were you worried the whole time?
Yeah.
You never
I was
felt
worried
like you got a break?
When they said, you have to push, I lost it. I was like, I'm not ready. What if he comes out and he's sick? And I've had 100 ultrasounds and I'm still not convinced. And then when he came out and I saw his face, and I was like, and then I was listening because they do everything in the same room now. And I was like, go, I was yelling at my husband. I was like, go back in that corner and make sure he's okay. He's like, Jen, they're like cleaning him. He just came out. I was like, go back in that corner. Like, I was being like such a bitch. That point, not when I was like pushing or anything. It was at that point. I was like, go back and see if he's okay. He was fine. Everything was fine.
Looking back on it all with some perspective, after the birth of their son, Jen and Jeff both had thoughts of why they wanted to share their story.
And even to this day, I don't think anyone really that I know has really sunk in about how difficult it was. Like, oh, you have another kid? It's like, you know, we ask about it. I'm like, well, we can't just go on another kid. You know, it's not like, and they don't get it. You know, and I get it. It's just we can't just do that. Secondly, Jen doesn't work at her company anymore. We had excellent insurance. Like, all these things are going. Like, I had to, like, break it down to them that way. Like, I can't afford to just pay out of pocket for it. My insurance company doesn't do it at my comp where I work, you know. And they were like, oh, you know, they kind of, oh, yeah, that's right, you know. I don't know, maybe that's guys being guys and if the wives would look at things differently. But I don't even think so. I think.
And it's an easy question to ask. It's an easy follow-up question.
It is.
Question.
Yeah.
It's, like, pretty common.
Yeah, especially, you know. I used to just blow it off. I used before, but now it's one of those things where it's, you kind of get sick of the question, so you really, hey,
right?
It's not just, we can't just do it, you know, and this is why. So maybe, you know, hopefully they'll stop asking. But
people are like, oh, IVF, oh, it's like a turkey baster. That's what I heard. I'm like, so we're not going to go there, right?
One more thing,
it's not a turkey baster.
You didn't feel like educating them.
I guess I was so,
and this is why we're
done.
Here.
With educating people at that point. Done. But for the most part, you know, I'll never forget going into those IVF appointments. It was like pin drop. No one talks. No one looks at each other. There's so many women in the waiting room and they're just heads are down. You're on your phone. You're in a magazine. It's just silent. Like no other office that I have ever been to. And it's really sad because I think there's that shame that comes with miscarriages, infertility, IVF, which I felt it for sure. That's why I'm always like, I feel like I'm willing to tell a story because what if someone's on the fence about IVF and they're scared of the needles? Well, I was scared too. Looking back now, it was nothing. It was nothing. I mean, the worst part is your husband giving you shots in your butt. Because you're like, this is not what I expected. Marriage, making babies. And I'm like drawing a quadrant on my right butt cheek. I'm like, make sure you get it. It's like the north one to the west. And he's like, I got it. And then there's blood. It's like, but it really is nothing in the grand scheme of it, especially when you are successful, I think, in IVF, like we were.
And finally, Jeff had some advice specifically for the men out there.
Number one, you got to be the key support figure. You're there to get them through whatever it is they need to get through. You know, do everything you can. If they want you at those doctor's appointments, you know, make sure you're there. Or hey, if you can't get to all of them, find out what the key ones are and make sure you're there, because I think that's the most important thing, you know, is what they're looking for is a lot of support. And then don't feel like, you know, you have to be the answer to things, because that's like a natural instinct of men, and you've already gone to the point where you're addressing it with a medical solution. They're your answer. Work with them, you know, get that out of your head, you know, and don't feel bad about it. You know, because it you know, that's where you are now. So come to grips with that as fast as you can and then begin the process and work together as a team.
That's awesome. That's like, I would love to use you as an educational tool for every freaking husband that I have to deal with on a daily basis. My God. Most husbands don't have this perspective.
No.
And are really annoying. sorry.
See how lucky you are.
No. I don't have to deal with you on a day-to-day basis. I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah. No,
it's hard. Like the, you know, it's one thing. I give guys a lot of credit if they just don't know what to do. But so many of the times they like then end up just checking out, which is like so not what anyone's looking for.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to see the other side.
I'm sorry to all the guys out there, but seriously, get it together. Thanks to Jen and Jeff for telling their story, and most importantly, for feeding me cookies on a Spider-Man plate during the interview. It's like some people just get who I am on the inside. Waiting for Babies is produced by me, Stephen Mavros, with help during interviews by Laura Mellon. For those of you who live in the Philadelphia area, Wednesday, August 9th is our launch party and live interview event at WeWork in Northern Liberties, where Laura and I will take the stage and do an in-person interview with Elizabeth Walker and Maria Novotny from the Art of Infertility, who each bring their own amazing stories of turning their struggles of infertility into art. Tickets are available on our website at waitingforbabies.com. Afterwards, you'll be able to grab a drink and meet some of the people featured in this podcast. And I promise it'll be an entertaining evening. So I'll see you then. Take care.